Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. And this week we are brought to you by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of Northern Utah. And if you have any other questions about that, you can direct them to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
I'm Easton. We're your two favorite hosts of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast.
Motorcycles. I'm a little bit depressed, Easton.
Because it's winter and cold and you can't ride and there's no racing to watch.
All of those things definitely are helping, but
yeah.
I just got done watching a 6-part documentary-ish. I guess it's a documentary based on a true story.
Okay. What?
About, I know it's a bike show. I know it's a bike show, but it's about Senna, the Formula F1 driver, 3-time world champion.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got to give my, I got to give my recommendation on that. Anybody wants to know what it feels like? I mean, obviously on a super high level coming from him, but what it's like racing or being a racer, what some of these people give up to go racing, regardless of the sport. There's a sad ending.
Uh-oh.
Any fans of F1 already know the ending.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Easton does not know, but.
Give me the name again of the guy.
Senna.
No, I don't know.
I knew you wouldn't. But for the listeners that are yelling at the TV right now, mm-hmm. or whatever they're watching, they know how this ends. But very good. Very good. I would highly recommend people go look that one up. It's on Netflix.
Netflix. All right. Netflix documentary based on a true story. That's why I was giving the weird look. I mean, a documentary is it's meant to document history.
Well, it's a so it's not a. I don't know the rules, but
what are they? Do they
it's call not this, a. Like, it's not a, like a narrated documentary talking about. So it's like the soldiers move forward to Bunker Hill.
Hang on, they've got a word for that. It's like a dramatary docudrama. Docudrama, I think. Drama documentary name. Docudrama. It's on Wikipedia. Docudrama. There you go.
Yeah, I know you were probably weren't born yet when he was not racing anymore, but
I don't know.
His last season in F1 was in 94.
Yep. Yeah, that would be not born yet. That's correct. Okay.
So when he started racing go-karts and stuff, it was, you know, late 70s. Which was still new enough, Easton, that there was camera. There were cameras back then.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to, like, put the towel over their head and go, you know, and replace the bulb every time or nothing. They had 8mm. So, that being said, the show does a really good job of, like, blending old pictures in. Like, they'll reenact some of the scenes that happened or whatever. And then,
yeah,
instead of waiting till the end, a lot of these docudramas or whatever, maybe
at the end they'll be like, this is what he actually looked like, here's a picture of him actually winning a race, or you know, whatever it might be. Okay.
Yeah, they did a good job as far as, like, sometimes you're watching it would show like a video, like a home video,
mm-hmm.
like maybe his mom would be filming him with a camcorder thing and it would show the video and you didn't know for sure if that was actual footage or, I mean, they did a good enough job just weaving that in throughout the whole thing.
Interesting. Okay.
Anyway, it's pretty good, and I recommend it for anybody that's into racing, not just two-wheeled racing.
There you go. Well, on that note, should we roll an intro and get back into the two-wheeled part?
Yes, please.
F1 is cool. F1's pretty cool.
If you cut the car in half, it's got two wheels on each side. So, roll the intro.
Yesterday, at one point, I was in sick.
We're back and we're live. It's been a long time, but we are live. Kind of.
We could do live.
I don't want to bring it up, and I know the audience won't answer the question, but like, if we did a live here and there, maybe once a month, would anyone tune in? That's a question for the audience. Let us know down in the comments. I'm curious. Or just keep listening. That's fine, too. You know, you mentioned Formula One. You cut it in half. You get a motorcycle. What are your actual... I think it's a good topic to start off, and I don't know if you were planning on that or not, but I want your actual opinions on, like, we'll just make it simple, MotoGP versus Formula One, and just kind of, as a motorcyclist, I'm going to argue that the motorcycling is way more, right? You got to move with it to get the bike to move. You got to be in the right spot to get the most out of the bike, all those different things. The Formula One drivers, I'm pretty sure they're pretty, like, locked in. Like, they physically can't move.
Yeah.
But I think they also see more G-force.
So, well, yes, but I don't want to give anything away from the show that I just recommended everybody go watch, but it does kind of make you think of Formula One in a little bit different way. And it was the 90s. So to me, that's pretty modern. So
I don't know.
We're not talking about racing wagon wheel, horse drawn chariots or anything.
Yeah. It ain't the chitty chitty bang bang type of.
This was the glory days, man. The Marlboro cars and the Camel cars and the.
Yeah. Before they took the cool big money sponsors away.
In that show, they did a good job of actually, again, like I stated before the break, showing some, like, blending in real pictures or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he ended his career with Renault, Williams Racing.
Okay.
And hit the whole outside of his hands were rubbing on the inside of the car. And he was mad because race after race, he couldn't get him to fix it or whatever. But he had just giant scars on the outside of his hands, and they portray that in the show,
yeah,
quite a bit. But it actually shows some real pictures of him all bandaged up, and he had a transmission failure in one of the races that he won for a championship. He had a transmission failure and had to finish the race in sixth. And they maybe didn't do a great job of explaining why that, you know, wore him out or whatever. But he stayed on track, won the race. He had a 40-second lead when he had a transmission issue with 11 or 12 laps left. He was losing seconds every lap. And the number two car is catching him.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of it, and I don't want to contradict myself because at the end they did show some more pictures. But at the end they portrayed that he couldn't get out of the car. He was just stuck in the car. They had to, like, pick him up, and he was almost crying.
Because of the transmission issues?
They didn't really explain why he was more wore out than he would have been otherwise. Or maybe he just had pushed so hard to hold that win or whatever.
Yeah.
But his shoulders wouldn't work. They had to, like, drag him out of the car, stick him in a little ambulance vehicle, haul him back to the pits. And then in the show, when he tries to hoist the trophy, he drops it, like, he picks up that big cup, right? And he's trying to get it up over his head, and he drops it, and somebody in front of him catches it and pushes it back to him. And they showed the real picture afterwards. He did.
Actually drop it?
He did actually drop it. Somebody caught it and held it back up for him. And
okay.
I'm just saying, those guys, we always hear about the G-forces are so much, like, on their spine. They all have back problems and for different reasons than motorcyclers have back problems.
Yeah, I mean, I was also going to say, I've heard that apparently the brakes in those cars are actually extremely hard to, like, press down and get full braking force. Like, you stick an average person in there. I don't know if they don't have brake assist. I have no idea how those cars work. But you want your full braking force. Anyway, that the mental game of how much longer the race is, the fact that you got to do pit stops, you can change your tire compound during the race, so you got to kind of manage, which, you know, you got a team manager that's in contact with you the whole time, so that might help with that. I don't know, it is interesting to compare the two and actually think about it. I would say that motorcycling requires more skill, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's any harder
physically. So
yeah.
So I always say that, and if you recall what was the Ducati thing they did where they brought out the new Ducatis and ran them around the track.
The Race of Champions or whatever?
Race of Champions. Remember, I kept making comments that the bikes seemed too big for the track?
Yeah.
Because they couldn't quite brake as quick. They were using the whole track, you know, to get around it. And there's not an F1 race that the track doesn't look too big. It's like an LS-powered sand rail at the sand dunes. They need bigger mountains. I mean, those cars are so fast.
Yeah.
I'll give them that all day. I mean, I can be on board on a MotoGP and be blown away going, how is that guy, his brain registering fast enough to go through, you know, a left, right, left, or because they're coming at him so fast.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's not just the speed. It's also the, like.
Yes, but when I watch F1, there's so much more jerky. So a Moto GP bike, it's like a symphony. You know, they're going through the corners and you're laying it this way and then you're coming back to this side. And sometimes you have to switch faster, right?
It's still like there's flow to it.
And F1 just seems violent when they're like in. I don't even understand how that guy's like. They're like, everything's really jerky. It's like, put some shocks on that damn thing. I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, well, like, I know exactly what you're talking about. You see a video of them both coming down the straight and it just like pops out. Yeah. But it doesn't turn out. The car just physically moves sideways, which I think is natural for a car to kind of be like that. But no, you're definitely, I never thought about that before, but you're definitely correct. There you go. There you have it. MotoGP is the symphony. Well, F1 is the, I'm not a herky, musician.
Herky jerky. So in my opinion, like I have more respect for the motorcycle racing, of course. I mean, that's why we're here. But that being said, like the competition level is my whole problem with F1. It's the teams with the most money win every race. One could argue that with Ducati right now, but it's not.
One could argue that with MotoGP for a long time.
Yeah, but it's. But again, I don't think it's. I mean, you think Honda doesn't have money? You think Yamaha doesn't have money? I mean, they won because the recipe was there. It wasn't.
Yeah. No. I agree with you. You know, for devil's advocate, there was an I think fake, but an article I read today about how much Mark Marquez is actually making, how scary it is, just with how deep he is in the world. And it's why he's always talked about is because he's got a lot of, he makes a lot of money and his sponsors need their time. So, but he also keeps getting the sponsors, and a lot of the professional motorcycle racers' salary, MotoGP specifically, a lot of their salary is not the team paying them. It's also the sponsors and everything else. And when you start to add all that up, apparently Mark Marquez is pretty, pretty scary. And people are like, well, there should be a limit on it to keep it whatever. And then anyway, we're not here to argue that, but I do agree that from my perspective and from even talking to people that watch Formula One, MotoGP is definitely a lot more raw, a lot more real. It's still got some fakeness to it. There's still a lot of big money behind it. But the other thing too, as someone mentioned to me recently, was like, there's no one in your ear out there. You know, you got Pecco Bagnaia and Andrea Bastianini and Jorge Martin. So they all had a chance to, if they won the last race, they would go. And Ducati's like, nope, it will be Pecco. But as soon as the lights go out, but like, you can't really do a whole lot. You can send them a message on the screen that says like, you're fired, but you can't, like, there's nothing you can do. You know, it's on, they're on their own out there. So I do think there's a big difference there.
And it should stay that way.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Just the man and his machine. Anyway, unless you had more to talk about, I just thought it was an interesting subject.
Well, you got a rider tip for us?
I do have a rider tip. You know I got a rider tip. Almost always got a rider tip.
Well, let's get that. I mean, I haven't been on the bike for a minute, so.
Forgot how to ride?
Somebody needs to teach me how to ride again.
All right. Well, this week's weekly rider tip, which is brought to you by Bittinger Motorsports. Bittinger Motorsports is private coaching to build solid riders through vision-based training. And this week, Josh Bittinger, he is busy this weekend down in Texas. They're doing their big old Thanksgiving weekend COTA stuff down there with Ride Smart, which I've seen a lot of posts from a lot of different people. I've actually seen, sorry, we'll get back to the tip in half a second, but I've seen some posts from people on a Facebook group called Track Day Addicts, and that was their first ever track day, and they are very excited. Like, there's no way it wasn't with Ride Smart, because they're like, just did my first track day at COTA, super excited about it, never going back to the street, and just different things like that. I'm like, huh, I know the people. Anyway, interesting.
But American flag themed bike, Ride Smart did, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. They've got, most of their stuff is pretty, I mean, it's Texas. they would probably tell you it's Texas themed, not American flag, but they're pretty similar. So
it had stripes. I mean, the colors are right, but this one has stripes.
Okay.
Come on, Texas. Come on.
All right. Anyway, back to the tip. Josh Bittinger has to say this week, communicate with your bike. The balls of our feet and soft inside part of our hand are areas of our body with lots of nerve endings. If you ever stepped on a Lego or gravel in bare feet, it hurts. Why? Because all of the nerve endings. By riding the balls of our feet, we can feel what the back of the bike is doing. This also allows us to rotate our hips easily by kicking up our heel. Secondly, with the screwdriver grip, we have the soft part of our palm on the bar end, and we can feel any chatter beginning to happen in the front end, and articulate our inside bar pressure better. Proper body position, placing those sensitive areas of our body in the right place, allows us to feel what the motorcycle is doing. Communicate with the motorcycle. Don't just provide input, but also accept the feedback.
And that's where I fit in. That's why you buy kangaroo gloves, so that you can feel it through the gloves.
Yeah, just thinner, saying. Thinner, stronger. Kill the baby kangaroos.
Kill the baby kangaroos, but not in California. And then it always comes back to killing kangaroos. But I mean, this is very true. After a track day or a race day, do you ever get like just totally wore out there on your hands?
Yeah, relatively. I'd say probably my feet more. Sometimes I'll come back and my feet and legs, like I almost have to go back into a race position to get the blood flowing again because everything's just kind of stuck.
Yeah, mine's all in the hands. I mean, that feeling's definitely, I feel like my hands are ice cream grip, whatever you call it, right? Moving further and further and further out till I just got the end of the handlebar stuck right there.
Yeah. My question with that is with the lever guard. You know, I rode a couple weekends ago, first time ever with a lever guard on, and I didn't even notice it was there while I was riding. But have you ever felt your hand go against that?
A couple times it's maybe saved me, actually, from
slipping off the edge.
Flipping off, but most of the time I don't realize it's there.
Okay. Yeah, because I guess if you're holding straight on and you just went out, sorry, let me move this, went out, you would hit it. But if you go for that kind of ice cream cone grip, you're going to be almost over the top of it, not really, or like underneath it, because you're not as worried about it.
Yeah, I mentioned the nerves or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's usually my hand that doesn't have that on it.
So that one's really,
yeah.
You're holding it like this. It's like the screwdriver grip for real.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good tip, and he's absolutely right. You know, after going down and hanging out with him, as we talked about last week, and seeing like what he means by the balls of his feet, it's cool to be with Josh and then hear these tips kind of come out while he's demonstrating. But you put your bike up on stands and you sit on the bike and you go out and you actually put the ball of your foot, not just on the peg, right? So if the peg's here, you put your ball of your foot. Let me do it like this, like that. No, he's physically talking about moving it to the outside, right? Mm-hmm. So the ball of your foot is on the outside of the peg, like pushing in towards the bike. And then it really does open up that what he's talking about with your hips being able to rotate how you want to, and everything else makes it much easier to rotate that heel back and forth. So
point the toes
and keep the eyes up. Always keep the eyes up. But yeah, there's a lot of nerve endings there. And, you know, like I said, at the end of the tip, communicate with the bike. I like that he says communicate, because it isn't all about giving the bike input. It is a lot about feeling what the bike's wanting to do / is doing, predicting what it's about to do, and then replying with more or less input based off those things.
Communicate with the bike. Thank you, Josh, for the tip. Keep them rolling. I gotta have something to think about while there's snow on the ground outside. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it is a good time to kind of sit back and reflect and go over, you know, one, all the tips we have had. I was just thinking mantra. You know, it's going to be my first season racing. And I've always had a kind of like natural thing I do on track days. I can't say the same about a race weekend because I've never had a race weekend per se, at least not on repeat. I've only done the one, and that one was, you know, in a borrowed pit, which was awesome. Shout out to Working Class Customs and Privateer Industries for that. That was a great time, but I'm going to be on my own out here this year, and I got to kind of figure out what that's going to look like for race weekends. So it'll be cool. I'm excited for it. Definitely something to review over the winter, figure out where you stand and what your plans are and where everything is for next this next coming year and season.
All right. I've been excited. I got something to run by you here.
Okay, what do you got?
So I wanted your take on some of these. So I got to give a shout out to on Instagram.
Okay.
The Instagram handle, if you will. You know, mm-hmm. That's
what 80s trackers. At.
Yeah, the Insta at. This is from, this is a post by the previous owners.
Of what?
I guess anything.
Sorry, at the previous owners. Okay.
At the previous owners. So yeah. I stole this from Instagram, FYI, at the previous owners. That's their handle. You want to go see it for yourself, please do. Hmm. But it says, we have handpicked our favorite Black Friday deals for 2024.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Okay. So we're going to go through these. I'm going to get your take on this. Number one.
Okay. Number one. Are these motorcycle related?
Yeah, man.
Okay. I'm just curious.
I know it doesn't let you know that in the previous owner's name, but again, Instagram, the previous owners.
Yep.
Buy a 2025 Ducati Panigale and get double the swing arm at some additional cost.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. That's funny. I like that. For anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about, go look up the 2025 Ducati Panigale.
Yeah, we've got a double-sided swing arm for the first time in a long time on a Panigale. So
yeah, and it costs more money. That's good.
I liked it. There's some better than others here.
Okay.
But I'm going to save my favorite.
All right, I'll bear with you.
Okay, so pay for one MV Agusta service and get told your warranty is void at no additional cost.
Ooh, nice.
That's rough, them poor MV people.
Yeah. I do like those bikes, but, man. Yeah.
So, as everybody that listens to this knows, I'm a BMW guy. My closest BMW shop is 2.5 hours, and that's kind of a negative for,
yeah.
You know, BMW is really good about warranties. They seem to be, but I also don't need to haul it 2.5 hours to get a warranty done every 10 minutes.
Right.
So no matter how
fair, where you're at, do you really have, I don't know. You know, I used to live in that area and last time I checked, there's no like sport bike places. Your local ATV places do work on, like, if you had an R1, could you take it over to your local Yamaha dealer?
On a Yamaha to be able to handle a recall on it, or they shouldn't be selling the damn things.
All right.
So yeah, I mean, I've got a KTM dealer, a Yamaha dealer, a Honda dealer, a Husky dealer, I have all those dealers, but there are BMWs a long ways away, and I don't even know where MV Agusta
is. Do you have a BMW car dealer?
No, but there is one in Ogden, so an hour away.
Okay. That'd be funny to pull up. Okay, I got a recall on this. Pull it out of the trailer. No lights. No.
It's happened somewhere in history somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. Ready for the next one?
Yeah, let's hit it.
Every Icon Striker vest. Do you know what that is?
Nope.
That's these chest protector, like the motocross guys wear that you see sometimes on the squids.
Okay. Yeah, the guys that are out there in like just the
shirtless, but they got their armor plating on.
Yeah.
Every Icon Striker vest comes with a get out of jail free card. In parentheses, good for DUI or domestic violence only.
Okay. Interesting.
Buy any 4-stroke dirt bike and get a free 2-strokes or better lectures for life.
That's a good one. Yeah. Are you one of the people that would be giving that lecture out?
I think you know me good enough to know that, I mean, I like 2-strokes or whatever, but I also went and bought a 4-stroke dirt bike.
To be fair, you like buying you like to make sure you're the only one that's going to abuse it, put it that way. And I don't know if you can buy a 2-stroke anywhere anymore.
So you can. KTM.
KTM's got them.
Gas.
I was on the Honda website the other day and I didn't see a 2-stroke model.
Yeah, they're pretty popular in the KTM field.
Okay. All right.
buy any race tire over any sport touring tire and get 70% off your road mileage for no reason at all.
No, that's not true. That's not true. So it's all in the name of grip.
It looks like, what are your Michelins called? The ones that you have or used to have your road tires on your Gixxer back in the day.
Yeah, they were the Pilot RSs.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It's in the picture, and then they're as a crossed out, and then they're comparing it to like a, basically it looks like it's a Pirelli, but like a Dunlop Q4.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Grip. You get more grip.
Buy any helmet cover and take 80% off the number of people who want to be seen riding with you.
Helmet cover?
Like the teddy bear. Or
yeah.
Things.
I'd say take, yeah, on this podcast, 100% off. I think.
Yeah.
Maybe only 50. I don't know, Cole. What do you?
No, I'm going full hundo.
Yeah, all right.
So I saved the last one. This one is for you.
Okay, here we go.
Ready?
Full brake ducts. What are we?
Buy the 2025 BMW Giant Wing and get the motorcycle accessory pack thrown in for free.
What's the accessory pack?
The actual motorcycle.
Oh, so you're saying I could go to BMW and buy a winglet? Yeah. And I get a whole motorcycle?
It says buy the 2025 BMW Giant Wing and get the motorcycle accessory pack thrown in for free.
It did get bigger. There's got to be someone in the BMW design department that was watching the memes about the BMW Wing for 2025. And it was like, yeah, let's do it.
Now, I know the motorcycles don't have anything to do with the cars, per se. I mean, they got separate dealerships. We just established that. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the trends, I mean, how big can we get the grill on the front of a BMW right now?
Oh, it can be bigger. Have you seen a GMC pickup?
Well, everything's kind of going that way, but
we need more cooling.
Or the Mercedes logo or the BMW logo, you know, they're bigger than a Frisbee anymore.
Yeah, Mercedes, though, like, they've got the giant logo, but if you look up close on the hood, there's another one. Just in case you couldn't see the giant badge, there's another smaller, normal-sized one up on the top of the hood. And it's like, oh, it's just in case.
That's because they know somebody's stealing the one out of the front. Make a necklace out of it.
You could by just cutting the inside out and then putting it over.
All right. So,
good to go.
So thank you at the previous owners for giving me permission to steal that from you. But hey,
that's pretty good. Those are pretty funny. I'll give you that. I've got some news.
Let's have it.
I don't have the full story, but we did have some people over in Europe, in the Spain area, doing what's called the International Games, FIM International Games in North America.
Inaugural year, right?
Yeah. Intercontinental. Sorry, not international. Intercontinental Games. In North America, took fourth overall.
Was that out of four or out of 15?
It wasn't out of four. I don't remember or know how many it was out of total. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I'm just saying, that's an important question, you know.
There's not any more. I'm just kidding. 5, 6, 7, 8, I think. Yeah, I think it's 8. So, I mean, apparently they had qualifying and everything. So, it's kind of...
You could have watched it on an app for free, but you had to download it. I'm over my download quota for the month, so I didn't, to be honest. I
should have gone and downloaded it. And are they... I couldn't figure out what bikes they are on. Is that the R7s? Gotta be. Anyway, maybe R3s. No, R7s.
R15 that you haven't heard of yet.
Anyway, North America took home fourth place, and Mal Dobbs took first out of, I forget what they worded that as. Let's see.
Top female rider.
Yeah, top female rider. There you go. Thank you. So, pretty cool. Motorcycling is still going on. Just thought there was some good, interesting news.
Yeah, I think they said on something I was reading about it, it said it was the last motorcycle event of the year.
Sad. It is that time of year where it is just memes left and right on my social media about bikes in the garage, and I'm sad, and insert whoever can come up with the greatest.
Hey, so no promises yet, but
version of that.
We did talk to Bittinger last week, and I have circled some dates on the calendar in February.
Oh boy. Okay.
There's a target drawn around them. So, and do you know that that's 22 hours for me? Whereas it's what, 17 for you?
Yeah.
It's actually, that's crazy. It's actually, I still consider Texas in the West.
Really?
I know they always say it's a southern state or whatever.
I mean, it's west of the Mississippi, so.
But yeah, you're on the East Coast, and that's, Houston is closer to you than it is to me by 5 hours.
To be fair, the other side of Texas, because Houston is like right over the border on my end. The other side of Texas is probably like 30 for me, and I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. It's kind of a big state.
It's pretty big. Everything is bigger there.
So when is he doing this asphalt he was bragging about last? Is that going to be done by mid-February?
I don't know. I don't have official dates yet. And I haven't heard any more news from him on that. I know that he's he had a busy week, as we talked about last week. Right. And then he's got to sit down and work on it and figure out cost and send out some bids and get some answers. I would assume, well, I don't want to put any words out there. I would hope my dream for it would be that it's before CMRA starts back up for the season. And I'm not a racetrack owner, and I'm also not a asphalt contractor, but I can't imagine that you can't patch a few or repave a few corners of a racetrack over the winter. I know, like, the Ridge likes to do theirs in the winters. And then,
well, now would be the time to do it.
Yeah. I'm just not sure of, like, you know, how much planning you need, how far out you have to schedule something like that. But anyway, I don't have any official info on that. If I get more info, though, I will definitely let everyone know, because that is a hot topic, MSRH, the motocross track.
I got a new story I want to cover.
Okay.
It's the tale of two cities.
Uh-oh. Okay.
The tale of two factories. Did you see CF Moto? The Chinese bike.
Yeah.
It's planned to have a 200-plus horsepower sport bike hitting the market.
I didn't see that yet.
To put them right up there, you know, swinging with the big boys.
State your source. 2025, CF Moto 1000RR.
Yeah, now you can state your source.
200 horsepower sport bike V4, cycleworld.com. Challenge Europe's and Japan's best. Chinese motorcycle brands, blah, 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 blah. Whole bunch of stuff. A V4, 201 horsepower. Interesting.
Instead of Kawasaki coming back to MotoGP, it's going to be CF Moto.
It could be. I've seen a lot of articles revolving around Suzuki returning, though, too. So,
yeah, CF Moto's already there, though, in the other classes. CF Moto's all over the place, so it would make perfect sense for them to throw a step up a class.
You know, it is interesting because maybe this is just me, and maybe I shouldn't be. I apologize to anyone that disagrees with my thinking out here, but like growing up, I'd see a Facebook ad.
Ha ha, you lost me at growing up with Facebook. Go ahead.
KSL Classifieds, Craigslist, all that. You see an ad, and there was a dirt bike, and it was like $100.
Thrifty nickel.
Sure. Yep, in the back of the, yeah, newspaper. Back of the
boy's life.
You see a super cheap dirt bike, and it's like, oh, that's a blue one. It's got to be a Yamaha. And then I showed my older brother, be like, oh, some Chinese piece of crap. Like, oh, okay. And so I just grew up with this Chinese piece of crap. Like, they're great out the box. You get them for about a week and they're good, and then they turn into junk and you can't get parts for them. And so you just throw them out and buy a new one, or you can just buy something reliable like a Honda, you know, real families bleed red, ride Hondas, something like that. I don't know.
You meet the nicest people on a Honda is what they say. Go ahead. Oh.
My bad. I never had TV, so I don't get all the commercials. But yeah, so it's interesting to see this CF Moto is Chinese. And so naturally for me, I am like naturally going to lean towards it's a piece of junk and it's going to break down on you. You're not going to be able to get parts. But you know, they're coming out and doing it the right way. If they're trying to get into racing, I mean, what better way to prove that you're not junk? But if CF Moto showed up to MotoGP, let's say in 2026, CF Moto shows up to MotoGP and they had as many problems as Aprilia does every week to week, would you not just be kind of blaming it on it being a Chinese bike?
Well, for sure. For sure. But, I mean, they're all garage builds anyway in MotoGP.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
But CF Moto, I mean, they have partnerships with KTM. They have partnerships with multiple people. I mean, as the traditional brands are moving their production over to China, they're probably built in the same warehouse that they're also building.
They're basically the same.
Building KTMs, which brings me to, you know, the Tale of Two Cities.
Yep. Okay. Tale of Two Cities.
So CF Moto on one side, City One,
mm-hmm.
It's taking over the world, growing. It's a great big open world that we can take over the American market. We can blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
KTM on the other side, I can't quit hearing about them going out of business. Now, it's everywhere. And to be honest, I ignored it for the first little while because I was like, yeah, KTM, they're not going out of business. But every time you peel a layer back on that onion, it's worse and worse and worse. They were telling their investors they were going to need, or their owner company, mm-hmm. telling them they were going to need like, you know, $100 million to stay fluid. They were saying they were like $1 billion down. Now it's $1.4 billion.
Well, so not only are you getting the news, but it's just getting worse.
Yeah, it just keeps getting worse the more stories that come out.
What's wild is I haven't seen anything about that yet, but I just Googled it, and paddockgp.com is saying, until we clearly know what is going to happen for us, the 2027 projects are currently on hold. Google's like straight up hit just says KTM is going through a critical period after filing for bankruptcy, jeopardizing the future of the company and its ambitious projects, particularly in MotoGP.
So here's where I wanted to go with that. With debts of over $1.4 billion, 100,000 unsold bikes, camshaft issues with the LC8, 790, and 890 engines, all stemming from oversupply and overproduction that dates back to 2019 COVID-19 pandemic, when bikes were scarce and demand was high, resulting in KTM growing bigger and faster than they typically would have.
Mm-hmm.
This says KTM has stated their commitment to MotoGP next year, and they've also committed to following through with building the RC8 1390 concept that's been shown recently.
Okay, interesting. Man, Cycle World's talking about it. Revenue is down 27%. Earnings before interest and taxes is reporting at negative $195 million compared to $97 million the previous year, which doesn't say negative, so... So if you want KTM to stay in business, everyone needs to go buy a KTM.
So we all know that KTM, Husky, Gas, they're all the same thing, right? From the dirt bike side of things.
Yep.
I'm a Husky fan. Recently bought a Husky dirt bike. I don't feel bad about that. But coincidentally, it's been interesting reading about camshafts and stuff because I haven't been paying attention. But I did just come across a guy a week or so ago that is a track day junkie. He does not race, but...
Okay.
He has a KTM 890 that he does track days on,
mm-hmm.
and he had one that he loved, and then he traded it in and got him a brand new one, and it's had nothing but problems over the last 6 months, and it had a camshaft failure, totally destroyed it, and he took it back into KTM for warranty. I mean, there is no warranty, right? But when he took it back into him, he said it was crazy. He said he was so surprised. They just said, we'll just take it back. Here's your money back. They like didn't even question him. He just showed up with the bike and was like, hey, bike broke. And they're like, here's your money. Thank you for playing. Would you please like to buy another bike?
Wow.
He said, no, thank you. I'm not doing KTM again. And they said, well, either way, here's your money. At least in that scenario, it sounds like they're trying to take care of people with these known problems. But bringing it full circle back to the CF Moto thing,
mm-hmm.
KTM's getting ridiculed a lot for moving a lot of production over to India and China, and I don't know if that has anything to do with anything, but it's the way of the world. It's been the way of the world for a lot of years.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. So you're saying KTM is just a Chinese piece of crap.
Well, I didn't say that.
That'll to put it in simple words.
Yeah. Again, I'm a fan of the Husky, so don't kill me, everybody.
Well, I mean, you're a fan of the Husqvarna, but why?
Well, it goes back to El Diablo, and it's given me. So I love my little 401.
I think you're just a hipster.
I'm a bit of a hipster.
You've watched motocross for a long time, and like everyone knows green, yellow, blue, red. No one knows this weird, I don't even know, what are they, bluish, goldish, white?
So, honestly, maybe it's my generation, but they say race on Sunday, sell on Monday is dead, right? That's not true anymore. Mm-hmm. Everybody says that's not true anymore. That's why motorsports can't get money the way they used to. But I will contradict that because I want a Husqvarna because they're sick looking, man. I watch motocross and the Huskies are the best looking bikes out there. And
all dirt bikes look exactly the same. No, they do not. Yes, they do.
They do not. That Ducati doesn't look anything like any of the other ones.
Well,
I'm giving you an extreme example there, but they are definitely different.
Okay.
And when I'm riding around with my boy Anthony on dirt bikes and he's on a Kawasaki and I'm on a Husqvarna, they are quite different.
So is it you do truly think they look the coolest, but also you a little bit just want to be different? And you had to pick, because when you said you were a Husqvarna fan and you said you were going to go buy a Husqvarna, I was very confused. So I've always known you as a Honda guy. I didn't realize that in the dirt bike world, the Honda thing kind of went out the window. Or is it just that Husqvarna came in and they don't make anything else besides dirt bikes?
If you're arguing, my argument was race on Sunday, sell on Monday, right? Honda's winning everything right now on the dirt bike side.
Yeah, I was going to say, besides the stuff that we normally talk about, this feels like a very weird conversation we're having.
I mean, they had a bad stretch over on the dirt bike side, too. I mean, Honda was known for winning everything for a lot of years, and then they went away, but they've come back. They got the right riders on the bikes. You know, I think that all of the brands make a great bike, all the brands that are out there racing. But,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, so, I don't know. I'm a fan of El Hombre. That's my rider over there. He was on Husqvarna. He's currently on Kawasaki, or was. But so, I mean, I guess I've proven the point that even a guy that supposedly doesn't care about those things still went and bought the bike that his favorite rider was on that he thought looked the coolest for not really any other reasons. I'll admit it.
That's fair. Well, that brings me to then why did you go with the BMW? And I'm not talking about the new ones. But back in the day when you bought your first ever like track bike, you went and bought an S1000. Could have had an R1, could have gone CBR.
I looked at everything. And honestly, if you were buying it, at least at that time, if you were buying a used bike, you could get a used BMW that had everything.
All the electronics, yeah.
All the electronics are on it. But if you bought a bike from the same time period, it was a dinosaur.
Yeah, that is true.
Because they were ahead of the game for a few years there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, even the 2010 when it came out, look at the Ducati in your garage compared to your 2010 BMW. I think we talked about that too, but the like 1098s and 1198s were there with the 848s and they didn't have it. So,
yeah, they're fairly bare bones as far as electronics are concerned. And everybody's all pushing that envelope now, but.
Yeah, moving into the smaller bikes, even. Should we? We're just talking about a weekend ago, but I was starting to think about that. Just came out on Monday. I know it's Sunday right now, but what will come out tomorrow. And if you're watching this on Wednesday, it already came out. It's a RS660 review I was able to do. It's weird to talk about like, oh, this bike's great because it's got all the electronics. That's what the world wants. So that's what people are giving us. And sometimes it's cool. I don't think all of it is necessary. I think there are little things that are pretty sweet. I love clutchless shifting. Big old game changer in my head. ABS, I think you could do without. Traction control, I haven't had to deal with yet. I know you've talked about like seeing how far you can go before the little light flashes.
Well,
and clicking it down a notch.
Yeah, well, how about this, speaking of electronics? I'm always bringing up the Husky 401, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing's got everything. ABS, traction control, auto blip, you know, all the things. But it has super moto mode. So for anybody out there listening that has a Husky 401 or an RC 390, or because they're probably the same, right?
Should be.
What in the hell do I need super moto mode for that thing? And when do I use it? Because I've taken around the track to the, you know, I've taken that thing. I just took it to the track again. That was the last time I was on track. And I took it to the actual extreme of you could not corner harder or go any faster because I'm dragging actual body bits on that thing. And I didn't use super moto mode. Somebody explain to me what the hell that's for.
Gimmick. Isn't that for the dirt?
Super moto?
Yeah.
No, I think it takes the ABS off.
So you can lock the rear and slide it around.
Yeah, which would be asphalt too. But
I agree. But doesn't Utah, that's one of the cool things about the Supermoto in Utah is they do have a couple little sections on the dirt, I thought.
Yeah, they do. Well, I'll go do that. And it still won't turn. And I'll still, anyway, that's a whole nother story.
Cole's racing Supermoto next year in his Husqvarna 401.
No, not unless my legs get longer. Hey, there's just some news. What? Utah SBA released their schedule.
Congratulations,
guys. That was way sooner than anticipated.
Yeah. Everywhere is releasing their schedules. I also got the club that I am planning on racing with also released their schedule. Or I was planning on racing with. Now I'm not sure based off the schedule. But it has been released. It is coming out. I know not a race schedule, but track time up in the PNW that we had on here released their 2025 track day schedule. Yeah, USBA. You guys have some...
Sticking with two-day racing.
Yep. Have they announced any difference in classes?
No. I mean, I'm sure they know at this point, but not that they've released.
Two-day racing and round six.
Six rounds instead of five.
And round six.
Is the perimeter.
The perimeter. The mighty, mighty perimeter that no one wants to race, but apparently people do because...
Well, people do. It's fine. It's not my favorite.
I like the perimeter. I think it's a cool, one, it's cool that you have three different tracks you can race. And two, I think it's a sweet way to end the season off.
So if you look at that, though, they did some things. It starts on the east and goes to the west, but then it does two east in a row.
East, east, and then west.
And then perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting because I don't know. I mean, people don't want to hear me talk about Utah, but all the time. But as that relates to any of your local racing organizations, when they do a switch like that, what if somebody's better on the west or better on the east? They look at that and go, maybe you're great on the west and not great on the east. Well, now you only have two rounds. They've just put you at a disadvantage. You better get better on the east. You throw that perimeter in on round seven when there might be some championships still being decided. And if the perimeter is not your jam, you're going to wish that was earlier in the season.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that also kind of evens the playing board a little bit to finish it up on a new track. Granted, you know, there's people that have ridden the perimeter and there's track days there and stuff like that. But like realistically for the season, that's a new track.
So if the scenario was the same as last year, which it changes every year, right? But, you know, our good friend that was on here racing an R6,
mm-hmm.
he don't like the perimeter.
On the R6?
Or on the R6. I mean, he might like the perimeter just fine, but if he's trying to race up a class, he's at a serious disadvantage on that weekend.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I'll give you that one. Yeah.
I'm just saying. It's fun. No, let the games begin.
Yeah, it changes things. It's kind of cool though. You know, it does throw a pretty big wrench in anyone that's like, yeah, I can beat just about anyone on my 600, especially at Utah. that perimeter straight is a
big disadvantage.
It's a big one. It's a big. So why not do the full course?
Because they got a jump in the way and they can't get an FIM.
No.
It's something about there's something about that dirt jump being there that makes it.
But that would have affected the east also. There's no way. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that.
I could be wrong. That's just what I heard. That's my understanding.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Check your local, for the listeners, your local club schedule. Let us know if it has been posted or not, because I know a lot of them are coming out. It's nearing the end of the year. People are... busy spending all their money on Christmas. And so, yeah, Sorry. I was just thinking about it. I was like, why, you know, why post now? And I was like, oh, you know, because they don't want you spending all your money on Christmas and forgetting that you got a race next year. So they're like, hey, also, it's Black Friday weekend. Yeah, but yeah, with that,
just send tires.
Yeah. With that, though, I don't know about Utah, but I know the club that I'm racing with did have a deal on race license prices on Black Friday. So that was kind of cool. Cool to see that. So I went ahead and ordered mine. Just waiting on some word back to make sure they're going to honor my license from Utah. So, but I don't think it'll be too big of an issue.
Well, remind me, I got to hit Josh up about that same thing.
Sounds good. Down at CMRA is what you're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The reciprocity. So, I mean, and that's the question. The reciprocity, I was having a conversation with someone about this real quick. Reciprocity and race licenses, as I understand, is that if you race Utah, but you have a license from a club that holds reciprocity, you don't have to buy the Utah license. It's not that you can, that they, it's not reciprocity with the school, it's reciprocity with the license, i.e. if you have a wearer license, you come race with Utah, you don't have to pay Utah license fee and registration fee. So right. It's not about, oh yeah, no, that just means we're good with your school that you took or good with your NRC or whatever. It's more so not buying a license for each club. So,
right. But
there's a whole bunch of weird rules with that. But yeah,
there's a lot of schools of thought there too. Our friend, Mr. Lugnut, he buys the license, whatever club he's going to. He's always just bought their license, even if there is reciprocity, because it supports the club.
Yeah.
For me, if I go race CVMA, they acknowledge the Utah license is good enough, but only for so many races.
Yeah, you can't, effectively, you can't win a championship.
Yeah, can't go race a whole season
without buying the license, which that makes sense. I'd think of it as I would say that reciprocity should be fine. I agree with Lugnut and his thought of supporting the club and, yeah, I don't know. There shouldn't never be a club making money, right? In my opinion, should all be nonprofit. But clubs got to stay alive. You got to make money to stay alive. And so it is this kind of weird fine line. And if you're not charging a race license fee to everyone, but would you get as many people if you didn't have the reciprocity? You know, how many numbers does that actually bring in? And that's down to each club individually and what they think that's worth and whatever else. So an interesting conversation. Maybe we'll continue that next week in the next episode. Race license reciprocity. Stick around with us for another episode. Maybe you'll get the rest of the conversation. But for this week, that is all we have. So
perfect.
Yep. Thanks everyone for listening. We appreciate it. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. Follow us on whatever platform you might be listening on. Don't forget, we're on YouTube, but we're also on other platforms. So if you just sat through this 45 to an hour long episode and you were watching the whole time and you're like, yeah, that's cool, but I can't do that again, feel free to go hit us up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever else you listen on and add us to your commuting playlist or whatever it might be. But thank you for listening.
All right.
We'll see everyone next week.